Hey there, this is Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Well, last week we thought we might have heard the last of Bruce Mercer before he ended his ride along the Great Divide Trail. The weather was only getting worse, and he was up against a deadline he never thought he'd have to worry about. Then came news that he was thinking about making a dash for the border, weather be damned. So his riding partner Bob Horsley joined me in the studio one last time so we could find out just how far Bruce got before getting picked up by his niece, who was scheduled to scoop up both Bruce and his bike for a road trip to the California coast. Welcome to the final episode of Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide. Bob Horsley's here in the studio with me once again. Bob.
Hello, Jeff.
And Bruce Mercer, we were expecting to hear that he is in the car with his niece and California bound. Hey, Bruce, where are you? What's going on?
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Bob. Good to hear your voices. I am actually, I'm sitting in my little painting chair, which I'm very glad to have right now. The sun is going down here at the border at Antelope Wells.
You made it.
Congratulations,
and
bud.
A series,
that's awesome.
Thank you very much. Yeah. A series of quirky things sort of came together from where we left the conversation last time. And at the last second, just kind of a window of opportunity opened up and I jumped through it and I am here. I don't have the king with me today, but all that can come out of the story. What do you think, Jeff? Should we just pick it up from where we left off?
Yeah.
I realized the last radio show kind of ended bleakly. It's sort of like two guys molding away in a hotel room.
Waiting out a storm in a motel.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the neon had been shot out years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't very encouraging.
So yeah,
this is great. Yeah.
I do know that you couldn't really ride the trail much anymore because it was impassable and you had to pivot to paved road was the last I heard.
Yeah, and this kind of basically what happened was we were in this just miserable motel room, another place I don't want to ever see again. No fun there. And King Harold and I were kind of sitting there on the edge of these crummy beds thinking, what is going to happen next? You realize that New Mexico was going through a dramatic series of storms because of all things Hurricane Ian, where everyone was looking at kind of Florida and the horrific destruction there and really tragic loss of life and so on. No one was really had their eye on New Mexico, which was suffering a series of storms, and I can't tell you atmospherically what created it, but because of the passing of Hurricane Ian. So what should have been normally the brightest, best month in New Mexico, which is why they had the giant balloon festival in Albuquerque in October, ended up being their wettest month, and which just liquefied all the back roads. So King Harold is, as Bob will remember, the single most optimistic person on the planet.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, oh, I'm sure it'll be okay. I'm sure we can get through. And yeah, it's just day after day of constant rain. And it's like, you know, Harold, this just isn't going to fly. And he said, no, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah,
and we finally, we had been riding with this other guy that pushed on ahead of us to get to Albuquerque just to take a plane and get out of here. And fortunately, Bart sent these photographs. It looked like the mysterious mud creature was eating his bicycle. And I was just unbelievable photographs of his bike. It's not just like splattering mud, but these big mud organisms growing over his bike. And so we realized, okay, those are not going to work. So the king and I decided just on the spur of the moment, he looks at me and says, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And like, yeah, it is time to MacGyver this thing. And we switched immediately to the paved roads and the series of quirky, weird, little, wonderful, loving little motels that are scattered all over. And it took us a while to patch something together, but we found a course we could take that allowed us to get around the dirt roads. And Bob, you'll remember that when we rode up Puget Sound in that 7048, the overnight row in the rowing shells, that we had that phenomena where we're surrounded by boats.
Yes.
And then we row into the night and things get nasty. Do you recall what happens next?
Yes, I do. The next morning, all the same people were around us that had been there the night before when the sun went down. And we thought we were going to be left behind by everybody, but everybody was still in this basically the same position.
And if I may cut in right here, 7048 is a crazy event that these guys took part in a couple years back, where human-powered craft of all kinds leave from Tacoma and are tasked with paddling or rowing 70 miles to Port Townsend in less than 48 hours.
After the long night, yeah.
And I think this is what Harold and I figured, the same, we experienced the same thing where we then, you know, plunge off and do this totally different thing and figure that, well, I guess all the other divide riders are just off. We've lost touch. Where are we? Who are we still part of this thing or not? And as we got talking to all these little tiny motel keepers and little tiny convenience stores, then we began to realize they actually were talking to all the riders we'd been talking with.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah,
the community was all still there of riders, only everybody had gone off route to do the exact same thing. So that the ride was still basically on, but everyone was kind of dealing with it in the same way. And there are these incredibly cool little towns like Kumota and Reserve and Glenthorne. And we just kept riding in the rain every day. It was just pouring rain and suiting up, and all the campgrounds had turned into, you know, liquid mud. So there was no way you could camp out, and thank goodness for these little motels. And everyone was very sweet and kind of pulling for everybody. So that all worked out. It was just fantastic. You know, as you do on these trips, as you well know, you just meet the most incredible people. One of the ones that stands out to Harold and myself, we were sort of suiting up for this last big push to get to Silver City, which was kind of this one city we could realize, if we can get there, that's pretty far along in the trip. We could even end it there and feel pleased with what we'd done. And we're getting ready to go, and it's just pouring rain. And we're pushing our bikes out into the rain. And this woman walks up, and she says, you know, she is housekeeping. And it's like, oh, hi, how are you? You know, it's like, good morning. And then she looks at me, and she says, she doesn't ask the usual things like, where are you coming from, yeah, or where are you going to? She says, how are you going to manifest your energy today?
A very appropriate question, though, right?
It was very appropriate. And it was just kind of left Harold and I gobsmacked. And we got talking to her, Anastasia Marie. She had been adopted from Russia like 20 years ago. And she had spent most of her life in this tiny little town post-adoption. And she was just one of the most evolved souls that I think I've ever met. And we had this esoteric conversation about, what do you do with your energy? And when things are not going well, how can you make that better? And she just kind of looked at us and realized, you know, these guys need some help here. So this young woman, without preaching at all, just kind of gave this philosophical view of the world. And we both pushed off into the rain thinking, damn, I think I know what I need to do today. I got to manifest me some energy and not feeling down on myself, but just digging this.
Yeah.
And it totally changed the view of what we were doing. It was magical. It was absolutely magical. She was an angel from somewhere.
Did it seem like the perfect time to run into her? Because now you're toward the end of the ride. You've got all these miserable conditions and you're dealing with all this adversity. It seems like if you'd run into her earlier, it might have been easy to just go, oh, well, that was interesting. But it seems like you needed her at that moment.
It was profound. It was surprising. It was helpful. And it changed both Harold and my attitude about it. And we talked about it a bunch as we rode along and kept kind of referring to it as we were passing each other. It's pretty hard to talk on bikes when it's pouring rain out. But we kept referring to it as the day went by. And that sort of gave us the energy to get to Silver City. And then when we were at Silver City, the relationship that Harold and I have developed has been a very good one. Harold was there to help me when I had giardia, and he was a terrific help. He was just this kind of supportive, always there, whatever I needed, giving, giving, giving. And then after I got better, Harold got sick. And I realized I was in a position to try to return the favor. So I've been working at that. Harold was sick longer than I was, but we got him through. He was having a hard go, didn't feel like eating, and you've got to eat a lot in order to do this. And so we got him to Silver City. And once we got there, we both went out that night and had dinner for the first time for me in 40 years at Denny's.
Congratulations.
Denny's. Yeah, I love it.
Thank you. What a score. Damn, I'd forgotten what a good time Denny's is.
Did you have the Grand Slam?
Well, I went back in the morning for breakfast before we went and got going, and I did have the Grand Slam, and it was magical, just like 40 years ago. But at that point, Harold sat in front of a small plate of eggs and toast and could only eat half of it. And we both realized that the weather was starting to change. The forecast was okay now. And what we decided to do was, my time limit was short because my niece is the rumor is she's still going to pick me up sometime tonight. And we're on a time limit. And Harold is not. He has several extra days. So we both kind of soulfully looked into each other's eyes and realized, you know what? He's going to stay in Silver City and recoup for a couple of days, get his strength back, try to get some food on board. And at that point, the weather will have dried up and all the dirt roads will be passable again. And then he will press on and get to the border with plenty of time to make his flights to get back to Norway. I risked it and I pressed on and I tried the dirt road anyway. And it was one of the better dirt roads I've been on. It was passable because a day had gone by in that part of the desert without rain. And I could squeak through. And it was probably one of the three nicest rides I have been on in this entire trip. So it was kind of a glorious conclusion. It was a long day. It was like 80-mile day.
Oh, wow.
And I met up with this other young guy, Clint, with about 27 miles to go. We both ate a mess of popsicles at this trading post and then pressed on for the last kind of, you know, almost 30 miles and got to Jeffrey Sharp's business where we camped out that night. And Jeffrey Sharp is the guy who comes down to Antelope Wells here and picks up people that dead end here and don't really have anyone to pick them up. So the thing came out beautifully. I got up this morning, leisurely start, and rode my bike down here. A couple of other people rode their bikes down here. And we've just been hanging out at Antelope Wells all day now.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
Everything worked perfectly to allow me to do this. So I snuck through. Harold's taken care of. I am in communication with him and prepping him with ideas around how to get around certain glitches in the trail. So he'll be able to follow in a couple of days and be a lot stronger and happier and actually enjoy the ride as opposed to just toughing it out.
Yeah, I just emailed with Harold a little while ago, and he said he was less than 20 miles away from Separ?
Yes, Separ, right.
And he said he had some of the pills left for his stomach as well, so it seemed to maybe help him a little bit. So, good.
We have plowed through all your prescription medications, Bob.
And great.
They saved the day. They just saved the day.
So he had the same Giardia-type symptoms, huh?
Seemed like it.
Wow.
Only his was sort of prolonged, just suffered a lot. And I probably had it more acutely, but then I got over it faster.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And I'm sure glad to hear he's on the roll today.
Yeah.
My communication has been poor, so I've been sending him texts, but I have not received one back. So great. Thank you, Bob, for the update on that.
Yeah.
Are you staring at the border wall right now?
It's a fence. It's not a wall. It's a gate, right?
well, for a glorious day and a feeling of like, my God, it actually came to pass. The day's ride was spectacular. What was the name of that guy? English author who wrote books like The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And he had a great description of sailing this boat to the end of the world. And all these different kinds of water you had to go through to get to the end of the world. And this today felt like that. We're riding between these thin mountain ridges, and you literally would go between them and all these cinder cones. There are a lot of cinder cones down here.
Hmm.
And finding this path through these things, and way off in the distance, you're raising these little thin blue lines, and you realize, oh, those are the mountains just past the border. And it was that kind of adventure of like, I'm getting to the end of the world. And I looked down at my computer, and I've been following this red line the whole time on my Garmin. And all of a sudden, this red line just stops on the Garmin. I'm thinking, I get lost without this red line. And I suddenly realized, I'm not lost.
That's it.
That's the end of the trail.
Wow.
and that's where it ends.
Wow.
And it was this very, very, very powerful feeling. Yeah. So I get within about 3 miles, and I could see that, there's a tall kind of radio tower. It's probably a cell tower, which is maybe how we're communicating right now. Really, this is out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. This is one of the most remote spots we've seen. And I'm coming down the hill, and it's just getting overwhelmed with the emotion of the whole thing. And then there's this long, dark line across the horizon, kind of this almost reddish-black line. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that? And then I suddenly realize, that's the wall. That's Trump's wall. And it was kind of a, not to get political, it saddened me to see this incredible landscape with this big slash across it. And I won't get into the politics of anything here. People have different views, and I respect everyone's view on it. But it was, to me, a feeling of like, wow, is that an unnatural addition to this unbelievable landscape? So I came down here, and there's no one here. It's closed. And I could have driven up to the window, but they don't want you to do that. So I just turned my bike around and rode back a ways just to kind of get away from this wall and been hanging out. And it's been very, very pleasant. Yeah. So a spectacular end to a 2,700-mile ride to get here. And it feels wonderful. It'll even be better when I get in my niece's car.
Yeah,
she'll be there.
Congratulations, Bruce.
Yeah, congratulations, Bruce. I'm proud of you.
Thank
bud.
You.
Of that 2,700 miles, Bob, where were you at when you left the ride in Colorado? Do you remember how many miles you had ridden?
Bruce was the counter. I think it was close to 1,600.
Something like that.
Isn't that right, Bruce?
Bob, you're right on the nose, man. I looked at my notes today out of curiosity. It was 1,650.
Yeah. I remember what you were talking about, Bruce, about how it really wasn't about getting from point A to point B. It was really about being on this amazing geological feature that straddles the divide between the Atlantic and the Pacific. And no matter where you ended the ride, it would have been a spectacular experience.
That's
exactly right. Towards the end of the ride, it meant nothing to me to get to here to Antelope Wells. Really, the significance of that was utterly unimportant. Why I pressed on was we'd been riding the pavement, and Bob, my mind went back to that cross-country ride, and you can't bear another tractor trailer zooming by next to you, or another big pickup truck floored, making a huge noise, pulling a huge camper van behind it. I'm riding along next to Harold and pull up next to him and say, Harold, I'm absolutely 100% sure I'm never going to go on a long road bike trip again, ever, never. And so I had that feeling inside me, and I thought, I can't leave it here.
Yeah.
This is too sad a way to leave this, even though Silver City would have been fine. And then when I suddenly realized I'll risk it, I'll just go for it, and Harold could recoup, so he'd be in good shape. And I realized it's best for Harold, it's best for me. And then I plunged off onto this dirt road, and it was magical. I spent my last night camping out again in my little tent with, all my little stuff around me, and that felt fantastic. So the whole trip turned on a dime in the last 2 days and resurrected itself into the absolute marvelous thing that you were familiar with for so many weeks, Bob. The whole thing has been absolutely magical.
Yeah.
I got a couple last questions for each of you.
Yeah.
Is there a pinnacle moment for you from this trip that will stay with you always? There are probably several, so I'll just ask you to identify one.
Go, Bob.
Boy, there were just so many, many moments. It's really hard. I think some of the moments that we had when we were in Montana, in like the Grasshopper Valley, when we would roll up to these places and we would have no clue what was available and we didn't know what the evening had in store for us. And we would roll up to a place that had an invitation to camp with no one there, no one to talk to us, no one for us to thank. It was just that generosity of strangers being good to strangers. And I think that was one of my feel-good moments of the trip. And that sort of continued on. It was sort of the spirit of the trip to me a little bit.
The two categories, there are sort of two categories, and they very much feel like separate things. One is the visual phenomena of things that are just so outstanding. And Bob, you'll jump to agree to this one, of setting off across the desert at 3 a.m. with headlamps and feeling just like on another planet. And is this really happening? And struggling across this desert road, just your headlamp and seeing the jackrabbit feet in front of you and figuring out what that was. And then watching that thin red line on the horizon all of a sudden appear. And getting that sense of like, my God, you can just feel the doming of the earth, and then you're rotating towards the sun. And it's just overwhelming to me, just tears in the eyes kind of thing. It's like, wow, this is big. And then the other kind of thing was, and I described the example, and we had many, many of these, the example of like Anastasia Marie, who everything is going poorly and life is not looking bright. And you're full of kind of woes and worries and so on. And this very innocent, loving soul just appears out of nowhere and lifts your spirits. And then all of a sudden, you're back. And you realize it's like, oh, yeah, everybody out here is pulling together. You don't feel like you're that person in the city pushing to get your deal done. And if everyone could just get out of your way, you'll be all right. And it's very much like everyone is pulling everyone up. Because everyone needs people to feel good and strong. And, you know, Anastasia just absolutely changed course. And so those are two different types, of which there are many examples of each type.
Yeah. Last question. People who do treks or journeys, undertake quests, always come back surprised by something or changed by something. Do you guys feel that? If so, what shifted for you on this trip?
Yeah, I'll have more to say on this later. If we do a presentation at the VCA, which I think we will, I will have formed this better.
This takes some thought, really.
Yeah, this is important. This is like getting here and initially thinking we're going from border to border, like we went border to border going crosswise. And then pretty quickly realizing this is totally meaningless. These are arbitrary borders, and I really need something more than this. And whether it ends here or 10 miles back there or 100 miles over there, all of that stuff, following a line all of a sudden was kind of an easy sort of, you know, left brain way to understand this ride back when we were gathering materials and so on. But it just wasn't, it held no water after a couple of hours. It was just like, wow. And then to begin to realize this much bigger concept of like, why here? Why are we doing this? Because there are things in life, in this case, the Great Divide is a measure of gravity, basically. What pulls things towards one direction? What pulls things towards the other direction? How sharp or dull a line is that? And what kind of disturbances or atmospheres change that on a daily basis? Oh, this huge thing that comes down to like big left to right, or this to that, and these very slow evolving changes. It's sort of like these, you know, King Harold was talking about this. It's like, you know, he had just retired before going on this trip. He was saying to me, it's like, this is a little bit like whether I should retire or not. Will the water go to the west or to the east? Or it's not this crisp thing. It is this big, huge feeling inside. And boy, did I hook that feeling. There's a particular incident right at the border of Colorado and New Mexico that I'll get into later, but it was a profound feeling. It was a huge moment. And this like, oh, that's what this is about. This is analogous to these huge changes in life that you just have to openly embrace. And that is my change point. That's what's different about me now.
Yeah, I think what I really took away from it was the trip was such a mixture of joy and pain, of wonderful times and difficult times. But the overriding thing was it was worth it. What we were seeing and what we were experiencing was definitely worth it. It's a big, beautiful country out there. And there's a lot to see and a lot to experience. And I don't think you're going to experience that without that mixture of misery and joy combined.
Remember that formula, Bob. What is it, the inverse principle, where the overwhelming beauty of any one place is inversely proportional to the ease of it to get there.
Right. As it should be, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think you're right. As it should be.
Guys, this has been such a pleasure to vicariously travel along with you on this journey. I look forward to getting to talk about it further at VCA one night sometime in the near future.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
That sounds good. Jeff, one last quick thing here. Jumping ahead of Bob here, but he's thinking the same thing. A very strong, quick thank you to both Julie and Kathleen, and to daughters, Madeline and Nell, who were kind enough to let us go off on this very self-centered kind of activity and so warmly supported the whole endeavor. I will be forever grateful and love all four of those people immensely.
Absolutely. And Bruce, you're in for a treat when you get back to the island. It's been wonderful just talking to people and having people ask me how it went, and just a huge amount of interest. And I think this radio show really contributed to that, but really outpouring of interest and just wanting to know how we were doing. That's been a great feeling getting back. It's nice to be home.
That's great. Thanks, Jeff. Many thanks for you putting this together.
Absolutely.
This is your baby, and it's awesome.
Oh, well, it served the radio geek in me in all the right ways.
Yeah. And if I'm still sitting here at 10 o'clock tonight, I'm going to call you back.
Maybe we got one more episode in us.
Any more revelations, you just let us know, Bruce.
As you're running away from the immigration patrol that's down there on the border.
I think a nice watercolor of the wall at night would be a good one, you know?
Thanks, right. Bruce.
All right, Bruce.
Safe travels with your niece.
Yeah,
have fun.
We'll talk soon. Take care, bud.
Okay. All thanks, right. guys.
Bye-bye.
In addition to Bruce and Bob and King Harold, thanks go to their island friends, Scott Englehart and Jeff Good, who joined the guys for a portion of their ride and contributed to these conversations. And to the whole gang here at Voice of Vashon, Richard Rogers, Jeff Fletcher, Chris Austin, and Kate Dowling, who set up all the streaming links and helped me get the full story of this adventure on the air. I'm Jeff Hoyt, and as for me, I've spent the better part of a year letting my own Hoytus Interruptus podcast catch its breath, but now I am ready to bring some of my own stories back to life in the coming months, so stay tuned for those, and I'll see you soon somewhere out there along the trail.
The Western